one of the recent surveys we did, or, you know, when they join our parents group, we say, what do you hope for your kid to get out of this? The number one thing, Katie, is socialization.
Hello, and welcome to the Kick It With Katie podcast.
Hey team, it's Katie here, and today I have Amy Schweizer. And Amy, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and let us know where you're from, where you're at now, and then what your background is in soccer.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me, Katie. I appreciate it. So my soccer career actually started when I was 16. So not to age myself, but prior to that, there wasn't really girls soccer in my area. So I'm from Danville, Illinois. So it's a smaller town in Illinois. And it just wasn't a thing. You know, soccer in general wasn't really that popular yet, let alone girls soccer. So how I came into soccer was I was on our high school basketball team. And our high school decided to start a girls soccer team for the first time in history. And they came to the basketball team and said, well, you guys are athletic, so do you want to play soccer? And a lot of us had never actually touched, I never even touched a soccer ball prior to that. But we thought, sure, why not? We could try this out. So it actually ended up being the sport I loved the best, I loved the most, and I was the best at. So from there, I got to go on. I played D3 at a college in Illinois. And then I also went on after that to play for the WUSL. So I played a season there with the Cincinnati Lady Hawks. So it definitely evolved from never touching a soccer ball to where I got to go.
Yeah. So how did you take that further in your life when you basically quit playing soccer? How did you get back into the sport? Or did you, a lot of people, you know, sometimes they'll get right into coaching or playing in adult leagues or things like that after their, you know, college professional careers. And how long did it take you to get back into soccer? Did it take a while or was it more of an immediate transition?
I never left, Katie. So as you mentioned, adult rec league. So I've played in those for years. My knees are probably about done at this point, but I transitioned right into that. So I also want to mention I'm a military spouse. So we have lived over the last 15 years that I've been married to my Marine. We've been in North Carolina, Okinawa, Japan, Oceanside, California, Kailua, Hawaii. So we've been all over. And so I've got to experience those adult leagues in all sorts of places. So that's been really neat. And that just kept the transition up. So when we did move to Okinawa, Japan, while we were over there, there was an adult league there too. So we started a women's league that we were able to all play in. But then there was also really a need for sports for younger kids, especially over there when you're really on an island and things, options are limited. And so through that experience, I have three boys of my own. So there was really a need for that programming. And so I actually created Tiny Troop Soccer, which is a company that I still run today. And what that is just a chance for particularly military kiddos. It is open to all kids, but really to give military kiddos something that they can look forward to and be involved in. Because there are a lot of stressors in our lives in general, right? Everyone's life, but let alone when you're in the military, there adds a lot of different layers to that. And especially when you're a little kid who doesn't have the tools to deal with all of the impactful things that are coming, like you know, moved away from family, so you don't get to see Grammy anymore, or your dad's gone all the time, and you're not quite sure where he is. So there's a lot of up and down. So it's really, really critical to have consistency for military kiddos. And so through Tiny Troop Soccer, we love to be able to do that. It also, as you know, and all of your listeners, that physical activity directly correlates with positive mental health. So again, talking about those stressors of that military kiddos face, I think the rates of depression and mental illness or mental health issues are like four times the typical child. in military kiddos. So again, just adding to that necessity to give them something, a physical fun outlet to look forward to. And I'm just thankful that I'm able to provide that in a sport that I love.
That's awesome that you have been willing to start that program. So were you the person that actually started it and initiated that program, or was it a collective group that started it?
Yeah, so it was actually another spouse when I was over there had started teaching some lessons and started the program on a much smaller scale. And she, I can't even remember how we got connected, honestly, but when we were over there, she mentioned that, that she was leaving, PCSing, changing stations. And so, and was wondering if I wanted to take that over. And so I think I was pregnant with my second son at the time. But again, going back to the military spouse, employment is a struggle and a big issue there. And so that was something I was missing out in my life, was not being able to have the career that I intended to have before marrying into the military. And so some crazy notion, I said, sure, I'll step in and coach while I'm pregnant and have this little one at home and my husband's gone all the time. And then that just turned into getting more and more kiddos. And so I was like, okay, this needs to be like a bona fide program and company. And when the coaches that I did hire, which we do have a lot of military spouses on our team, that's really important to me to be able to provide those employment opportunities. When they started moving back stateside from Okinawa, that's why I said, hey, I have an idea. Let's go ahead and continue this in the States. And so now we're in, I think, 17 states, and we've been in a couple countries. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome that you guys have been able to continue and move that program forward for those kids, because that's so important for them to have that consistency and those people that are willing to do that for them.
So for the families that are military based, is this program, has it expanded at all? Is it localized to specific areas, or is it something that you are hoping will expand across the states that do provide those military bases and things? So how does that part of it work, the logisticals?
Lots of logistics. So we are, we've run in 17 states at over 50 locations, and they're all near military bases, again, to help provide, make sure that military kiddos have an option year round, but not, they're mostly off base. So just maybe at a local park or partner with a school or a church, so that civilian kids, as we say, civilian military, as mm-hmm. community kids can join the program as well. So we are always looking to expand. We're always hiring. So we have the option of joining us as a paid coach, but then we also started something where you can actually be a part owner of Tiny Troops and start your own location with all of our support and training materials and things. So logistically, we do a lot, everything remote, right? Because we're mm-hmm. all spread out. I have some people on my administrative team that I've never met, tons of coaches that I've never met besides via Zoom or Google Meets. And so we do our training that way. We do evaluations that way. So we've definitely had to hone in on what's the best way to keep in communication, keep quality control, but the good old internet helps us with that.
Yeah. And that's good that you guys are able to stay in communication, because like, for someone like me who is a civilian, I did have like grandparents that obviously served in the military back in the day. And I have friends and people who are military or spouses are military. At my kids' school, we have several military families. We have a couple bases in our area in Utah. And so when kids, like I know a family, they live just around the corner, and then they were here for like 2 or 3 years, and now they're in Texas, I think. I think they've been there since they last left. They left, I think it was just, either 2020 or 2021. So they were going to go there for a couple years. But if somebody moves from, you know, let's say Utah to Texas, and let's say there is a Tiny Troops in Utah, which I have no idea. It doesn't sound familiar to me, so I don't know. For example, they move from Utah to Texas and they're in a Tiny Troops here. And then is it an easy or hopefully an easy adjustment for the kids if they move from one location to another to just get right back into that same program? Is that something that you guys hopefully benefit and offer them so that they are still involved with that when, you know, I know often they have to move every couple of years sometimes. And so is that part of what you guys are hoping to do, is to be able to provide that stability so that when they go from one location to another, that that program is still there and accessible for them?
Katie, I love that you said that. That's exactly what we're trying to do. So we want that consistency. And sometimes people don't get my passion and my vision for it. You know, they're thinking, oh, it's just little kids soccer. Like, how does this have any impact? But we've heard from so many parents that said, we didn't even know you had a Tiny Troops there. And so we just were driving by somewhere and we saw a coach in a big blue, you know, bright blue shirt. That's our color, our royal blue shirt. And my kid was so excited. And then I looked on your website and found it. And so, you know, they just jump back in. So we absolutely love just to be even the tiniest thing, even though it's kind of odd, but be something familiar to these kids in their ever-changing world, you know, their daily ever-changing lives. And so we love having that consistency. And if they know they're moving and they know we have a location there, they just let us know. It's as simple as us on the back end transferring their registration, and then they're in. One reason we have month-to-month registration, Katie, is specifically for military kids. So,
right.
You know, a lot of times, again, me having three boys myself in sports and in soccer and everything else, you don't want to commit, you know, $200-$300 and 3 or 4 months because you don't know if you're going to be here, or maybe you're going on leave. So, you know, you're going home to see family. So you're like, we're going to be there for 3 weeks. I don't want to pay for, you know, 6 weeks when I know we're not even going to be there for half the time. So many military kiddos miss out on the opportunity of participating in group activities like soccer. And so our model is to run year round. So we run year round besides the month of December, just because, well, everyone's busy, but especially right. Military families, we're almost always traveling or have guests with us. And so we're off December. You know, East Coast, we take a couple months off in the winter, Southern states, maybe a couple months in the summer because of the heat. But either way, we run continuously year round. And we do that so that if you are moving or if you do have to go home for a month, you didn't just miss out on a whole sport season. You can jump in and pick up whenever it is that works for your family. Or if you have to take a month off, but then, you know, you get back into it the next month. So we really try to make it so that our military kids get the same experience with sports and the same opportunity with sports as the civilian kids do.
That's amazing that you guys are trying to provide that, because I know just from having people move around during the pandemic, we had a lot of people transfer in and out of our location. We were kind of a hotbed for people to come and move their businesses to during a lot of the COVID shutdown. So we had a lot of transplant people that moved here to Utah. And so a lot of times there were a lot of parents that they're like, our kid loves sports and soccer. And so we had several kids that came into not just my program, but all the programs in the area that were moving these players in, but they were obviously going to be there for, you know, at least a year, like a fixed period of time, most likely. So being able to provide a program for people who knowingly are in a job that could literally uproot them every couple months or something, you know, more than a regular job that most people have. Obviously, there's other people who travel a lot and things, but sometimes their families are kind of rooted in one place. But where these military families are moving from base to base, even country to country, fulfilling their duties and being able to provide that for those kids and make sure that they have some sort of stability and program to look forward to, that's just amazing. So I totally applaud you guys for starting this, because to me, that is so amazing for them, because they give so much to us here in our country, and I love it. So that's just amazing that you guys are able to do that. So do your kids participate in that program, or are you still a military, like, is yours, because you were saying your spouse was in the military, correct?
Yep,
are they still active?
So he actually just retired about 2 years ago. So we moved back to my hometown. All of my boys did do Tiny Troop soccer when they were little. And they've all aged out at this point, but they all three play in our local rec league, which I think starts in about another week. So we pretty much live at the soccer fields between rec practices, and my older's on a travel team. So there's lots of soccer in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fun for families to be able to experience any, whatever sport or activity it is that your family might be in. You know, my family was we did multiple sports and dance and different things, and just being able to stay active and have those memories as a family. Like, I love being able to think about some of the dance competitions, you know, that we traveled to as a family, or soccer tournaments that we traveled to as a family. That's where some of those memories growing up spark from. Not all of them, but there are definitely highlights and things like that. So I definitely get the very, very busy soccer family persona. So with the Tiny Troops, you said that your kids aged out of it. So what's the age range that you guys mostly do? Or do, I guess.
Yeah, we have the tiniest of the tiniest, Katie. So we do 2 to 4 years old. And why we do that age is because you know, back when I started this about 9 years ago, most of the base sports, so the, you know, leagues that are on the bases or on the installation, started at age 5. So for stay-at-home moms like me who were literally living on an island, right, you're going crazy at home. Your kid's going crazy at home. You're like, we've got to get out to do something. So that's why I focused on that young age. And even though more and more activities for the age group has popped up, we've just really stuck with that. And a lot of people say, you know, what soccer are you possibly teaching a two-year-old? And we really, really, really focus on basic gross motor skills. So we're trying to get your kiddo to be able to run without falling over, right? Be able to listen to someone besides mom and dad, you know, learning about proprioception and where my body is in space. And if my arm's doing something, what is my leg doing? I still have to control both of these things. So we are trying to do all of that, Katie, with an introduction to soccer. You know, quote scrimmage for maybe 5 minutes of each of our classes, because we're just really trying to lay those foundations of when it is age appropriate, they have a better chance of that easy transition into the traditional recreational program. And so, you know, we're doing things that are prepping them maybe for their first preschool class too, you know, so just listening, being in a group, there's crazy kids, what's happening. So again, just trying to really lay those foundations, and we dribble, 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 dribble is really what we focus on soccer wise. But yeah, not the traditional soccer games that you'll see a lot of leagues do. I don't feel like that's developmentally appropriate for this age. So again, yeah, we focus on those basics.
Yeah, it's always great information and stuff to know, especially kind of as like it's like going to preschool before going to kindergarten or, you know, elementary for any foreign listeners. So basically, you know, just learning those core fundamental skills, which is always very important, because I've seen, since I've coached some younger ages, when kids do come to a tryout for a young, very young age, and like you said, they don't know how to run properly, or they're falling down consistently, because, you know, when you run during soccer, sometimes you're hitting your toes on the ground and you're tripping over yourself all the time. So knowing how to do that properly and teach them, especially at those younger ages where they're absorbing so much information so fast, it's very easy to teach that at those ages, because they literally are just absorbing and learning so much. And so they have that capacity to be able to learn that. It might not show all the time, because I know at those ages, We always say it's like herding cats sometimes. but they're definitely a fun, energetic group to definitely be involved with. I think the youngest my kids started officially playing soccer was about three. We had our son start when he was three because he had seen his older brother doing it, and he, you know, really wanted to get out there. And even for those age groups, it's very difficult for kids, especially people who might be moving around a little bit and aren't familiar with people. It's good to be able to get them introduced to new people and being in those social situations, because it might feel a little bit awkward. And so that was something that my son, who now has almost zero problems being able to do that, we used to have to go out and hold his hand on the field sometimes, because he was a little bit nervous to go out on the field. He was one of the younger players that was out there, but he wanted to do it for the most part. We weren't forcing him. It was just a rec league. But he loved playing soccer. And so when he would actually like get out there and go, he'd have so much fun, but sometimes he would get a little bit nervous. He had a little bit of social anxiety when he was younger. And so, especially for those kids who, you know, might be thrust into a new environment, that's a great program for them to be able to have that introduction and learn those skills, especially if they're going to be a long-term military family, you know, having to learn how to move from place to place. That's a good thing for them.
Yeah, definitely. And you said socialization. That's actually in one of the recent surveys we did, or, you know, when they join our parents group, we say, what do you hope for your kid to get out of this? The number one thing, Katie, is socialization. And I was like, oh my gosh, it wasn't soccer. Like, that was like mind blowing to me to hear that. But no, It's socialization. So that is so true. And really, we're trying to get kids to fall in love with being outside, being active, having fun, moving their bodies. And so do I hope that's with soccer? Of course. But, you know, that's our goal. We're not trying to make soccer superstars or whatever. You know, we're just trying to lay these foundations, and hopefully they fall in love with soccer. But that's not, you know, that's not our goal. And just the repetition at this age is so key. Just repeat, repeat, repeat. And like you said, you may not see it. They may run off crying, but then one day they're at home, they're like, I want to play soccer. And they dribble, and you're like, why, how, where did this come from? Right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that repetition is great. And the socialization, especially for military kids and their parents. A lot of times, when you move to a new place, Katie, you know, it's hard to make friends as adults sometimes.
Yeah.
Imagine literally knowing nobody. Mm-hmm. You have to ask the mom you see at the park, can you be my child's school emergency contact? Literally, this is not a unique situation. It happens all the time because you know nobody and you can't rely on your spouse because of their demanding schedule. And so the socialization is just as important for the parents. And so a lot of times our Tiny Troops parents, the first people they met at a new duty station was at a Tiny Troops practice, and then they become best friends. And like, we love those stories, or they get connected with a friend in the community, right? Because they were both at Tiny Troops. And then that bridges that gap for them to get more involved in their local community and build those relationships, which all makes for healthier human beings, right? We need that relationship and communication.
Yeah. Definitely agree with that for the socialization for the kids and adults, because it definitely is a scary transition. Because I know some of the people that I know who I feel like are decent, I guess, soccer friends, and my daughter is really good friends with them. You know, they moved here from out of state, and that relationship has just grown over the years for them. And so they're, you know, that's a good introductory to making those friends and those memories, also being able to remember that information. And I love that you were saying that you want them to be able to fall in love with, you know, being outside and feeling that sense of, you know, team and type of things, because I love soccer for young kids because it's a great gateway sport. So even if your kid doesn't play soccer long term, the core skills that they teach at young age groups are very transferable to any sport that you end up playing. And so I really love soccer for younger kids, you know, like I said, even if they don't do it long term, because it teaches you good skills about how to run properly, how to be able to, I mean, even in this situation, just listening to a coach, you need to be able to be coached on whatever team you're involved in. And also just being active. Little kids want to be able to move and be active, especially at those young ages. And so soccer just lets them run and literally, I mean, at those young ages, like you said, dribble, dribble, dribble. That's, you know, all that I would hope that people are trying to teach those kids at young ages is just being able to run and dribble with the ball at their feet, because those are the basic skills required in soccer. So for those parents who might be at home and they're like, I need my kid to be involved in an activity, soccer is really great because it gets them healthy, it gets them active, they run around a lot, they, you know, and they feel that sense of team and friendship with people, they learn how to listen. And so if you're considering what you should put your kid in, I personally love soccer. I know I've talked to a few soccer people or just sports people who said they tried to put their kid in like t-ball at this age. And it's really hard because they have to stand a lot in t-ball. And so unless your kid is extremely disciplined, most kids, like I said, at that age usually want to run around. And so that's what soccer can provide. And I love basketball as well, but it's also a lot more hand-eye coordination, which sometimes takes a little bit longer. And soccer can provide some of those base skills. So it's always a great gateway sport. So if you're a parent that's trying to decide what you want to do with your kids, look into those young youth soccer programs like Tiny Troops. I think in our area we have something called Soccer Shots or Soccer Tots or something like that. So it's a very similar program. Just obviously not based or started out of a military place, but I do know that it's something that has or been offered for preschool age children to be able to be involved in and learn those base skills. So I love that. Do you have any great feedback stories or things that you want to share about starting the program, things that you feel have been impactful for families that you have seen?
So one that you may not think of off the top of your head, but that's really important to me considering the military background, is we hire primarily military spouses. And so again, as a spouse, it's difficult to maintain a career, especially the one that you chose, because of your marrying into the military and your lifestyle of moving every 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Again, you're the primary caregiver for your children just because of the lack of predictability of schedule on your spouse. And so it was really important to me to be able to provide employment opportunities for spouses. So, you know, I typically say I can't provide you $80,000 that you may have been making at the job before you married into the military, but I can provide you a sense of self-worth and get you outside and moving and provide you with an income that you can be proud of again, to give back to your family. So we've hired over 500 military spouses within our career. We do have a lot of civilian coaches too. Love them just the same, but we're just proud to be able to add that into it. And then from the player standpoint, one thing I always love to hear are the examples of the kiddos who would not leave mom and dad's leg, like, you know, death koala grip, like not leaving it. And then their parents just stuck with it. Repetition, you know, we say, just bring them, let them see what's happening, let them absorb what's going on around them. Maybe just kick with them off to the side, right? Like, this is a big deal. Again, a lot of them haven't been in any sort of group situation, so they are learning. And we always tell parents, keep that in mind, have that patience, they are learning. And so just seeing them be the ones that go from not leaving mom and dad, you know, death grip, to the ones who are, hey, Coach Amy, first one out there, this is what I did this weekend, and just all of a sudden a completely different kid. Those are the transitions that we love to see a lot. You know, and of course, the ones who go from barely being able to walk and stand up and kick a ball to actually being able to dribble. And we've had those success stories where parents come back and say, oh my gosh, my kid was like head and shoulders above the other kids dribbling, because, and I'm like, Yes, because the foundations, they got comfortable with a ball at their feet. So now their brains, now that it's age appropriate and their brains are actually developed enough, they can incorporate these other soccer concepts, the concepts of play. So tons of impactful stories. I absolutely love what I do and what my coaches and my staff, what we're able to accomplish.
That's awesome that you're able to employ those people because, like you said, sometimes those military spouses do feel alone, especially, like you said, if they're not able to continue pursuing the career that maybe they were doing previously. And so being able to provide something consistent for them is very important because I know for me as a person, I like to be able to be consistently doing something. I don't like to be idle. I mean, I have a part-time job. Well, technically two because I work in an office part-time. I coach like three teams, and then I decide I'm a mom of five. I'm a soccer coach's wife, so we travel all the time. We're always super busy. All of our kids play soccer, and then on top of that, I decided to start a podcast as well.
Why not,
So
Katie? You've
I'm
got
not an
plenty
idle person, so I would not be able to handle, going from one place to another and not being able to find something for me to be able to do. So I love that you guys are providing an opportunity and a space for those spouses as well, not just the kids, to
time.
be able to be involved and give back to the community that they are part of. And like you said, I'm sure that it gives them a sense of place and a sense of community and being able to form those adult friendships, which again are oftentimes very hard to connect with people. Like whether you are a parent at a school or in some sort of church organization or sports organization or something, like you can meet those friends, but when you're always being in a new place or it's very struggling for people to find that. And so providing that sense for those adults is just great, and I love it. Are you guys looking to continue to expand the program as much as possible? And if people are interested in seeing if there is an opportunity to expand in their area, if they're near, I'm assuming that they're near military bases, is where you guys are. And so if somebody is in a space that maybe they don't have a tiny troop soccer community and they would like to help start one, would they just need to contact you if that's something that they're interested in doing?
We are always looking to grow and expand, Katie. So definitely. And again, our locations are primarily near military bases. But as we've expanded, we have gone into just traditional regular communities as well. So I just wanted to emphasize that it's not solely military. You do not have to be military affiliated to work with us or to operate one of our locations. What's important to us is that you love working with kids and you have a great personality and you have a desire to serve the kiddos and your community. So, with that being said, we have at tinytroopsoccer.com, you can find we have a link that's join our team. You can see all the available positions we have. But we also have that ownership opportunity where maybe you're a stay-at-home mom or you're retired and you're wanting to do something, still serving, giving back to the community some way, but makes money added as well. You can go to tinytroopsoccer.com/ownership, and that's something where we partner with you to give you all the training, all of the good stuff, and you're able to operate it at your own location, making your own business out of it. So would love to have anyone interested reach out to us. You can find us on all the socials at tinytroopsoccer.com or, well, Tiny Troop Soccer anywhere, but our website's tinytroopsoccer.com. But yeah, we'd love to hear from anyone who's interested.
That's great. And I also feel like there's an opportunity for people who are possibly interested in coaching, but maybe they've never done it before. Would you say that this program is a good program to get people's feet wet into coaching? Obviously, you have to remember who your audience is and who you're helping out, which is those younger ages. So you also probably have to have that temperament to be able to handle little kids. But would you say that this is a good gateway program for people to experience coaching, and seeing how they do in that setting?
It is actually a perfect opportunity, Katie, and for a couple reasons. One, as we get older, as our kids get older, it's so easy to forget what is the actual purpose? Like, what is the purpose of sports? And it's to have fun, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we forget that a lot. So starting coaching at this age, you have to be fun. And so even if you do want a career in coaching, starting here is perfect because you learn that personality. Now, will it come time? Does that evolve as you age up? Of course, you know, and the things you're required to do, but you should never lose that sense of fun and personality. So what's important to us and what's important for, I'm sure, coaching this age anywhere is that personality. We say you have to be able to turn on your coaching personality. I mean, my assistant director, she was a probation officer by day, but if she can turn on that personality when she gets with those kids, which she can, that's perfect. And so we actually, in our interviews, Katie, you have to read the book With No Pictures by BJ Novak, so the office creator, right? So we make our coaches in the interview read that. And if you had a stellar interview, you know, like, oh my gosh, we're going to hire you. If you get to the end and you're like, and the monkey said, like, we're not hiring you because it's not going to work. You don't have the personality to fit with our kids. I don't care what the paper, what the resume says. So you have to be able to be silly, get outside of yourself, forget there are other adults around. You have to be able to be in it with the kids. So this is a perfect opportunity to start your coaching career. You don't even have to have soccer experience per se, because again, at this age, a lot of it is basic gross motor things. And we have a training program that teaches you all of the basic soccer skills you would need to present. So no problem there. Again, personality and your desire and willingness to serve others.
And do you guys have like a specific curriculum that you like all of the coaches to follow? Or do you guys make them kind of come up with their own stuff? Because it sounds like you have stuff.
Yeah, no. Oh, is that coming off? Is that controlling that personality? Yeah, so type A personality. No, we put extensive research into our plans. When I first created them, I had a coach who was an L-Ed, elementary education major. So she was in on it with me. So everything we do has a purpose. Some of them are the same games you'll see at any other ones, but we've created a lot of our own. But we provide that plan so that I've been a coach, I've volunteered before, and having to come up with plans all the time, like people are like, oh, I'll just go out there, until you just go out there without a plan and the little tiny humans eat you alive, right? Like, not a good idea. So you have to have a plan. And so I know, you know, nobody has time to search YouTube and watch videos for like hours and hours on end. So we try to make it as easy as possible. We have lesson plans. So we're like, here's what you do pretty much minute by minute. Obviously, you're flexible to what the kids are having that day and what's going on with them. But we provide those plans for you. And I just want to mention our positions are paid. I know that's different than a lot of youth coaching positions, but you know, I appreciate everyone's time. I do expect you to follow these plans and things. So you are paid in our program. And that kind of transitions me, Katie. I wasn't going to mention this, but we also have a coaching course called Everything You Need to Know to Coach Your Child Soccer Team. Because we all know, like, I've already gotten it that we need a coach or we can't play, right? They're coming out right about now. They're all out there. And so we, as a staff, almost all of my administrative staff, we have soccer experience and coaching, playing, all that experience. And so we are always the ones who have to volunteer with like the rec leagues, right? Because no one else will do it. Or you go and it's a coach who was willing, like bless their heart, but knows nothing. And you're like, I cannot handle this. So you end up coaching anyway. So we were like, let's make a course that is like a self-paced, self-led. We give you practice plans. We give, like, don't start a group text for the love of all things soccer. Like, here's all these apps you can use, right? We're like, here you go. Here's what you need to warm up before a game. Here's a video of how you do this. Here's how you handle kids who are not listening or participating. So we actually made this fun self-paced course that we hope that parents take advantage of, or even rec leagues say, hey, we want to purchase this for our coaches, you know, so we have that option as well.
Awesome, because I have actually seen several people, especially now that like spring rec programs are starting up, where people are posting in some soccer parent Facebook groups. They're like, I'm volunteering to coach this team. What can I do? What are some good, you know, things that I can do? And then they get, you know, like 100 comments of people's opinions of different things that they can do. So this is great that you have something basic and something that people can learn from, especially when people don't have that soccer background. Because I know, like, from your experience, I had played soccer. I'm married to a soccer coach. And so I've been in soccer basically my whole entire life. And so when I let, you know, other people coach my kids, like in rec and stuff, because I was like, I don't have time or whatever. And I'd still end up helping out, or I ended up coaching parts of the season because, you know, the other coach wasn't able to be there because of work or whatever. And, you know, it's just rec. And so they were like, can another parent coach the game and that type of thing. But anyway, so I kind of got thrown into coaching. You know, I'd been around it already for several years and I really didn't want to get into it. And then I kind of did get into it. And then I don't want to say thrust into it, but I was challenged by my husband because he saw me coaching from the sideline when my daughter was playing. And for those of you that haven't listened to my story, you can go back and listen to it. But basically, I was at a game. My husband was able to be there and I was coaching from the sideline because the coach wasn't doing very much of anything. And he got mad at me because obviously he's a coach. And as you hear on this podcast, parents stop coaching from the sideline. I am a product of that. And I turned coach. I've learned a lot. I know my place. And when I go to games now, I shut my mouth. But anyway, so,
harder said than done.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I was at a game last night and, real time right now, is what's the date today? Today's the 22nd, March 22nd. So anyway, my son's team had a really, it was a very frustrating game last night. The parents on both sidelines were getting frustrated, and it's a team that we play all the time. And so we play them in different leagues and we play them in tournaments and stuff. So we see this team all the time. And so it's like, I feel like it's a crosstown rivalry, even though it doesn't really need to be, but it just feels that way. And so the game always gets heated, and we were playing on a field that isn't absolutely amazing. It had, you know, it had grass. It didn't have dirt or anything, but like the grass is a little bit thicker. So when we try and play possession soccer and we're passing, the passes, you know, don't quite get there because the grass is eating up all the momentum and stuff. And so it's really hard for us to play the game that we want to. And anyway, so we ended up in a tie, but you know, the ref kept having to tell both coaches, basically tell your parents to chill out and stuff. And I got there late and, you know, I was just standing there being quiet. My dad had shown up and anyway, so I was standing there talking to him and we were talking, you know, reminiscing a little bit while we were on the sidelines and things. But, you know, there were some parents that were yelling stuff out and being argumentative. And it was just like, you guys just be quiet, just let them play. Obviously the ref wasn't doing an amazing job. Our team got like, it was, I would say he was, it was the Oprah Winfrey thing where you get a yellow card, you get a yellow card, you get a yellow card. And I think the other team got one yellow card, but they got like 5,000 warnings. And so we kind of felt really one-sided, but it was like, what are we going to do? You know, we just have to play. And anyway, so it was a very frustrating game, but it's definitely a learning experience, you know, for parents, making sure that we're keeping our tempers and things like that. So, but back to your soccer coaching thing. That was like a really weird tangent that I just went on. But anyway, for your soccer coaching program, again, for parents that are interested, that if you are, you know, going into coaching your kid's rec program, or maybe you're a first-time competitive coach and you've taken a grassroots course, but you want a little bit more information on what you can do with teams, this sounds like a very great course that you guys can look into and pull from for training sessions and things so that you can further that career. Because as coaches, a lot of coaches know that you're learning all the time. You're learning from other coaches. You're learning from watching the game. You're learning from Watching game film of games that you've already played and things. So it never hurts to get more information to be able to help out those players, because you want to provide all the best benefits to the kids as possible, because this is really for them. And so having as much information and availability of resources is always great for people, and for people who are just wondering what it takes to be a coach and what actually goes into being a coach. This is also great information, because sometimes people don't realize, I mean, obviously it varies on the level, but when a coach is trying to plan their practices and they're saying, I need to know who's going to be at practice, what's your availability, please mark. Like, we have an app called TeamSnap where we can mark if our kids are going to be at practice or not, or at a game or not. And when people don't mark that they're going to be there, like they just don't respond, me as a coach, I'm going, okay, these are the types of drills or activities that I can do during practice based on the number that I know are going to be there. And then some people don't show up and their parents don't communicate it. And so all that planning goes out the window. And so it does, you know, obviously sometimes get sick or emergencies happens and things like that. Those things happen. And, but for when you're planning a practice for 12, 13, 14 kids, and then only 8 show up, what you're going to do in practice is obviously different, varying on the numbers, because people are there or not. And so it's very stressful as a coach, not knowing what you're going to do and having to transition what you had planned on doing into something else because you don't have all the players there. But just having those resources.
And based on that, Katie, too, is I think for rec, a lot of times people think, oh, I'll just go out there. It's not a big deal. Like, I can teach them how to kick the ball, or, you know, what my dad said before I played soccer, I played football. I can teach this, right? Or people even who have played soccer, it's not the same as coaching soccer. And so
it's very different.
You know, our course is for the parent who either has no idea about soccer and, like, you need basic, you know, research, and for the parent who you may know about soccer, but you don't have the time to go find plans and figure out what you're going to do, right? You barely said yes, kind of. You were voluntold to say yes, right? Yeah. So you don't have time to do it. You know, we're all so busy. So this is like, here is a package for you. Like, please use this. And Katie, the best thing, then if the coach doesn't know about soccer, they're actually getting taught properly. Like, that's like, we're so excited about that. Like, yes, please use these. Then the kids still learn the proper foundations. And we don't always have to be the one doing it.
Yeah, which is great. And it always helps to have more coaches and more resources available, especially at like the rec programs. You know, some people are like you said, oh, it's just rec, I can just go out there. But some kids get their initial introduction to soccer in those rec programs. So sometimes I feel like it's even more important for people to be put together and know what, not necessarily, you don't have to be teaching them like extremely high level skills, but just being able to teach the fundamentals properly and in a fun environment is very important. I know when I started out helping coach rec, I had to, the first time I think I did it, I was just asked to do it because the original coach had something, I can't remember what it was, but anyway, it doesn't matter, it was years ago. And so I was like, okay, I have balls, I've got stuff, what do I do? And my husband was like, you just have to keep them moving, keep a ball at their feet, and make whatever it is fun. And, you know, he gave me a few different fun activities or drills to do with them to make sure that they stayed engaged. I mean, one of the favorite things is just dribbling around in an open space and then telling them to put the ball on their head or sit on the ball or lay down on the ball or just something basic and silly as that, where they're doing something awkward, where the, you know, they're dribbling and then they're like, wait, I have to do what? And it's kind of like, but you're also teaching them to listen for the coach's voice. So they're doing something and then they're being told to do something else and they have to listen for that cue. So obviously we don't want them to pick up the ball and put it on their head, but it's just the fact that they're able to dribble, listen for the coach's ear, and then follow a direction. Something as simple and basic as that.
And staying moving. Moving. When I see lines, I want to die. I'm like, oh my gosh, I cannot be in lines. Like, please don't do it. So yes, keep the kids moving.
Yeah,
So yeah, I'll share that link with you, Katie, that I, you know, share with your listeners. Would be happy to. They can check it out.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would be a great resource for people because, like I said, I know that there's a lot of parents right now with that spring season coming up or summer soccer type of a thing where they're just going, I have no idea what to do. And this would be a great resource for them to be able to do for the kids and be able to help fill in if need be, if they aren't already helping out with a program somewhere. Do you have any lasting information that you want to leave with listeners as far as your experience with your program or just being a soccer mom in general or a former soccer player? Any advice or anything that you would like to give to parents or players currently?
Yeah, something that, Katie, could be a whole nother episode. We haven't even touched on it, but you kind of mentioned, you know, with the referees. So we're, you know, we're in almost, I'm almost thinking we're almost in a crisis level with the lack of referees, but that's happening because of the treatment they're getting from parents. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you said in that, in what you said about your son's game last night. So we have to keep it in check. We have to, there are going to be mistakes. The person is human. They might not be the best ref, but guess what? They're out there and your kid wouldn't be playing if they didn't agree to be out there. So either shut up or get out there yourself and learn how to ref. There's ref courses all over the place. And even, you know, some of my friends who are getting teenagers nowadays, they're like, I would let my kid ref, but, you know, like that'd be a great experience for them. But I'm not going to subject them to adults who are going crazy and can't control themselves.
Yeah.
And then here I am going to be in a fight because they're yelling at my kid who's the ref, right? So we have to do better as parents and spectators of the sport. Not only remembering that we are there to support our kid, but also that the person reffing is human and they are making this opportunity possible for our kids. And so we just have to do better on the sidelines.
Yeah. I just did an interview earlier this week with a referee. And I don't know when his episode will come out, either before yours or it might be after, I don't know. It'll depend. But, he basically, you know, said like, he was very blunt. He said, you know, not all refs are good refs. You know, they're going to make mistakes. You know, there are good refs and there are not so good refs, but they're still reffing. Like, and, you know, we had a conversation about what you just said. And I said the same thing, you know, if you don't like what's happening, if you don't like the way a ref is reffing, then go do it yourself. That's what I did as far as coaching. I didn't like what I was seeing. And so I did something about it. I went and I got my, you know, I went and did the coaching courses and now I'm a coach and I've been doing it for 4 years. And so if you want to be able to fill that gap, then you need to do that. Because like in my area, and I mentioned this as well, I would remind parents, if we have a ref even show up to our game, you guys should be thankful. Like, it doesn't matter what the quality of reffing is. We need to be grateful that somebody is at least showing up to our game so that we can play. Because I know that at some of our games in our season in the last year and a half, I've had probably 3 games just for my teams. And this doesn't include, obviously, the whole league, but just me being involved with teams where I haven't had a ref. But we still, you know, between us and the coaches, we're like, we can't reschedule this game. So we played without a referee because we obviously, we couldn't make the reschedules work or whatever. But so just be grateful that you have a referee show up and you never know what the quality of the reffing is going to be, but just be grateful that they are there. Because without them, you know, depending on what league you're in, the game may or may not count. And reschedules, like I'm going through a reschedule. This is our reschedule window right now to get.
Kids can't make it and you can't make it. And then it's a whole thing. So
yeah.
Just
quiet, yeah. Guys. So just be grateful if you have a referee show up to your game. And, you know, because a lot of times we do get a lot of new referees. And like you were saying, people don't want their kids like, because it used to be a lot of soccer players would be refs to make money to go towards their sport. And one of the reasons, not all of the reasons, one of the reasons why a lot of parents, like your friend's parents, won't let them ref is because of the parent abuse. And mm-hmm. so you need to remember that we are in a shortage because of this. A lot of it is due to the sideline yeah. behavior of people, and they don't want to subject their kids to that environment. And so parents that are willing to say, I won't let my kid ref because parents are terrible on the sideline, I really hope that you aren't part of the problem, yeah, you know, for sure. because obviously it's a vicious cycle. And right, and so right. we definitely need to do better, because I definitely feel that. And like one of the things in our game last night was the referee came over to our coach, my husband, and said, you know, people are still yelling at me. You need to tell them to be quiet or I'm going to give you a card. So in our league, they have a thing where if the parents are giving the ref abuse, the referee will card the coach. So if the coach can't coach the game, like if the coach leaves and there's not an assistant, luckily we did have an assistant at this game, but sometimes, you know, assistants are covering for other games or whatever. They can't be there. Sometimes, you know, you don't want your head coach to be sent away from the game for parent behavior, because then it turns out to be a forfeit, and that is bad for the kids. You don't want your kids to be affected by your behavior, so please be quiet. Because the other thing that they can do in the league is they can just clear the sidelines altogether. And if it is one team versus another that is being the problem, then that team can be like on probation for the rest of the season. Yeah. And depending on how that probation goes, depends on whether or not you're basically allowed to have parents on the sideline type of a thing. Like it's, you know, so they're trying to crack down on it, but the fact that they had to put this in place is ridiculous. And like you said, we just need to do better.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I really have for you today. I'm sure that we could go on about other topics, but I really wanted to focus on your Tiny Troop Soccer. And then I'm really glad that you brought up your other soccer coaching course, which both we will link in the show notes. So if you are interested in Tiny Troops or that coaching course, and what is the coaching course again called? It was
pretty long, but we wanted to make it so you had knew exactly everything you need to coach your child's soccer team successfully.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I knew it was a long one.
Yeah, but that's literally, here you go. Like,
yeah.
Wrapped it up with the bow, here you go.
Yeah, so both of those will be linked in the show notes so that you can get those links easily and be able to follow up on those programs if you are interested in them. And thank you so much for coming on, Amy. I have really enjoyed this conversation, and I really love your program. And thank you for putting that together and helping progress that for those families, especially for those military families. That's amazing that you have been able to help do that and consistently provide that over these years.
Thanks so much, Katie.
Thanks for kicking it with me, and have a great day. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at @KickItWithKatiePodcast_ between all the words. You can reach out to me with questions at KickItWithKatiePod@gmail.com. I also have a feature with SpeakPipe where you can leave me your own voicemail message if you want to be featured on the podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.